Kildare Today with Clem, Owen and Kira.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, yes, hey, welcome back now and thanks for joining us. And a reminder again that at 5 to 11 this morning, we'll have our special tribute here to all those women who have been killed in through violence going back to the year 1996 when Women's Aid began. We'll also have a minute silence on air at 11 o'clock and we invite you to join us in that. And indeed, from 5 to 11 for our special tribute to all those, in memory of all those women who have been lost to us. Now, coming up on the programme shortly, we'll hear from an assistant professor of psychology at DCU. Reading to babies, we're told, has a large effect on vocabulary by the age of three. The Force of Trade Union wants schools to do better regarding ventilation and providing SNAs with high-grade face coverings. Also back to the Atai Municipal District with Councillor Aoife Breslin, and we'll have another chance for you to do the mystery voice. In fact, here's just a chance to listen to it again in advance. Now, don't enter at the moment. And when you do enter later, we'll do it around maybe 10:30. We don't want you to put your answers in your entry. We don't know what you're going to say in order to keep it fair. So don't put your answers in, because that way no one can say then, OK, FM, you're avoiding the ones with the correct answers or whatever else. Have a listen. Three speakers.
Yeah.
And
no.
Yeah and no. That's all I'll tell you. Now, before we move on to see how babies can benefit from reading and so forth, we got an email in the last couple of days. Let's call this gentleman Sean. He doesn't want to give his name for obvious reasons that we're satisfied with. He says, reference the recent tragic events in Tullamore and the righteous anger from the general public as to how such a thing could happen. There have been a lot of questions about what can be done in the future. Well, I have a few suggestions, he says. At present, there are gangs of mostly male teenagers all over the country who act in antisocial ways with impunity. In every town and city, the problem is the same. They harass people, engage in minor crimes, and start taking alcohol and drugs. They can't be touched because they are, quote-unquote, children. Their parents' guardians rarely accept responsibility for their actions. Local security people in shops and businesses can't do anything because they haven't the authority, and the Gardaí rarely respond to complaints. By the time these individuals reach the age of 18, they are accustomed to getting away with anything because they've suffered little or no consequences. I think that what we should do what they do in Hong Kong, bring in corporal punishment from the age of 12, says a listener. Well, I'm not sure now if inflicting violence, you know, is the cure to violence in the first place, because violence begets violence in that case. Charge their parents for any cost that their activities cause to reinforce the punishment. Clear the record by the time they reach 18, but they need to learn early in life that inappropriate actions have consequences, says Sean. As always, thank you. Your station's a pleasure to listen to. You cover all sides of the issues, raising subjects that are rarely brought up in the national stations. Thank you for that, Sean. Just another reaction in terms to what is a complex, multifaceted problem. I agree with Sean on one thing. If we're to change the culture in society, it must start in the home. Move into the schools and broader out into society, where our politicians lead and the judiciary have a set of laws to deal with issues. But it starts at the most fundamental level of teaching children how to respect each other, irregardless of gender. Speaking of children, I'm joined now by Dr. Sinead McNally. She's Assistant Professor of Psychology at Dublin City University, known as DCU. Good morning, Sinead.
Good morning, Clem.
Thank you indeed for joining us this morning. I was taken by this article that I saw on Sunday. It was in the Sunday Times in regards to the tone of it. Reading to babies has a large effect on vocabulary by the age of three.
Yes. Well, it's lovely to be here this morning to talk to you, Clem, about it. Yes, we did a study that has just been published looking at whether very early reading to babies, so before babies are starting to talk and produce their first words, whether just doing something very simple like reading with them would impact their later vocabulary skills. So we often think of children trying to teach them words once they themselves start to produce words, start to read with them once they are pointing and sharing that interaction with us. So this is really quite a unique study in looking much earlier than that, when babies are 9 months.
No, you did this research. Sorry for talking across you there.
Oh,
you did this research in collaboration with the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, as it calls. And the article I'm relying on was by Valerie Flynn in the Sunday Times last week. And I was really struck by it. I found it fascinating. It's based on a large cohort of Irish children.
It is. So over 8,500 families are in this particular study, and the data is drawn from the Growing Up in Ireland study, one I, as no doubt you've spoken about before and are very familiar with. It's this fabulously large, representative and longitudinal study of children in Ireland. So researchers can use this data to answer some really important questions for children's development, for their well-being and their learning. So we are really interested, myself and Katie Leach in Chapel Hill, are really interested in children's early reading and what parents do and what caregivers do with young children, and whether this does have an effect on their language and later reading skills.
No, you're not suggesting really that as soon as the baby emerges at birth, we start reading Alice in Wonderland to them.
Oh, dear.
Or whatever.
Absolutely not. Although we are really interested in looking even earlier than 9 months, but we had this wonderful data in Growing Up in Ireland at 9 months. So we started there because a lot of research to date looks at when children are age two and older, and whether when we read with them when they're very active in their learning, when they're very interactive with us, that's very well established that supports children's language. And we know
I can well imagine that. I can well imagine in this, Sinead, that babies, while they're born and the eyes are blurred or whatever else, they react to sounds. And in all sorts of way, from something that will make them cry or whatever else. But as they develop in the early months, I've always been struck about how babies engage visually and will follow a particular noise source. So this is quite intriguing, because you found that 4 in 5 babies in Ireland are read to by at least one parent, but that has caveats or condition. It's conditional on basically maybe their place in society.
Yes, so we were interested in, first of all, were babies being read to in Ireland, because this is very representative data. So in a very positive finding, most children are being read to, so 80%. Of babies are being read to, but we were also interested in seeing whether there were factors that were associated with the likelihood of being read to as a baby, and we did find that this was socially structured. Babies whose mums, for example, might have a Leaving Cert education but not gone on to further higher education, those babies were less likely to be read to, for example. Or if mums reported, they said that they didn't talk to the baby while they were doing other things. So that's a really strong indicator of language input to young children as well.
And why is it so important?
It's so important because we know that vocabulary, so how many words children have when they're 3 years of age, is a really strong predictor. It tells us very early on the likelihood of children doing quite well in school, finding, learning to read that bit easier, which is really important for education, and getting along with their friends and socializing well in school and learning new subjects. So we know that the bigger our vocabulary is when we're quite young, so very young at age 3, is a really established predictor of how well we do later on with literacy skills, which, as we know, are so important for navigating life and subsequent education.
I'm very struck by some of the findings that babies are vocalising earlier. We're all familiar with the go, 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 go and the dribbling and all of that, which is a form. Yeah. I have always felt that the dribbling is a form, in a way, of vocalisation when the child is making sounds and is pleasant and smiling. I'm very struck by the fact that by 8 months of age, a baby's basic language comprehension skills are already established.
Yes, so this isn't from our research now. This is very well established in the developmental literature. So something that parents might not be as aware of is that children are understanding by the age of eight months. So it's not that surprising that reading to babies who may not be able to produce their first words yet, they are understanding us, certainly, and they're understanding several words. And they're doing exactly what you're referring to there, Clem, which is the joint attention. So that shared attention is so important with babies. So well before they're talking to us, even before they're pointing at things, they're sharing our attention. They're very excited and happy when we're sharing their space and their attention.
Yeah.
And that's one of the ways in which we think that reading together with babies who are sitting on our knees, not necessarily repeating sounds, they would be doing that around age 9 months. But what's really important is that affective or emotional connection, and that's building all of these social and language skills, which are really closely connected.
All right. Babies
are doing a lot, even though they're not talking.
Yeah, for those, by the way, who might come in armed with the Dandy or the Judy, the old comics to show the baby, yeah, and figure, I'll get the Encyclopedia Britannica.
And the Dandy is fine.
And my child will be a genius. There is a specific way I think you would advise to do this reading at that early age.
Well, the most important thing is the connection. It's sharing the focus on the book. So it doesn't have to be for a long period of time, and it most certainly doesn't have to be advanced reading or very sophisticated books. So I was referring there in that article to my favourite one for my boys when they were babies is something like Goodnight Moon or Ten Little Fingers and Ten Little Toes. And really what it is capturing the child's attention. They're sharing that back with you. They're showing you what they're really interested in. And you end up talking a lot about the pictures that are in the book. You give them what is called extra textual talk. So we're giving that extra input, those words that might not come up in conversation, because that's the main way in children, the way in which children learn to talk is through conversation. So what we think is happening in shared book reading is something special. It's another opportunity to learn words that we might not hear in everyday conversation.
And is that as much to do with pointing at pictures and saying the word as distinct from reading 14 chapters of the latest novel?
Certainly, yes. The first way to would be the way to go about this. Lots of language isn't a problem. You know, giving sophisticated language, we say to talk quite naturally with young children. You know, we don't have to oversimplify it with them either. But yes, there's a lot around pointing and the sharing of attention. But it doesn't have to be labelling all of the time either.
Yeah. And Sinead, can I ask you about one point there that it just drops into my head, because I'm fascinated by this story. I think it's fantastic. Is it fair then to extrapolate that when we use the word reading, that could possibly also include, you know, the rhymes we all have called out to babies in our time?
Yes, that's really important for language development. So rhymes are a very powerful way of engaging children. Music and singing and anything with rhyme is really attractive to young children. And we enjoy it as the grown-ups as well. The grown-ups essentially have a massive role to play in children's very earliest language learning. And I think that's what's coming through with this kind of research, is that children aren't passive learners, and we might think that we don't have to do anything, or we shouldn't, you know, be doing anything until children are much more active or vocal. But actually, when we sing to children, when we engage in rhymes, they're listening, they're enjoying it, they're listening out for more. You'll see babies' excitement when you stop, they're looking for more of this. And it's a real back and forth. And that's called proto-conversation. So it's that very early kind of pre-conversation interaction, which disposes children to learning and wanting to engage more in language and socialising.
So essentially, while we all might have done the goo-goo bit and, you know, who's a lovely girl and who's a lovely boy and all of that, we're underestimating the baby's capacity to actually absorb what we were saying.
Yes, many of us might be doing that, and that's why we're so excited about this research and these findings, because we can point to this and say, look, you know, if you are reading and sharing those lovely board books with your babies, that's brilliant. If you were kind of thinking, well, what's the point, or should I be doing this? These are really lovely findings to support getting out those books or giving books, you know, or going to the library, even when the babies are quite young. It's a lovely thing to do together.
I think it's a lovely thing, and I think it's fantastic research. And I suppose, are you going to take it on from here now, where your findings are based on the 8 months, 9 months cohort of age from there on? Are you going to take it back more towards the infancy now?
Yes, so in more observational, experimental work, we hope to go younger, but using the Growing Up in Ireland data, there's some gorgeous data there on the older as children age. So we're actually looking at the effects much longer, and that's our next study that we're working on at the moment.
All right, well, good luck with that. It's fantastic. Babies who are read to at 9 months, now it's not babies who are reading at 9 months, babies who are read to at 9 months have a more extensive and expressive vocabulary at the age of three. And the importance of that, of course, is it's the run into school in a couple of years' time, and when they approach school, how they can vocalise, how they can articulate things and whatever else. And I think we all understand that, you know, the value of reading for children. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've understood or appreciated until we heard Sinead's research now, along with her colleagues in the United States, of the value and how early that we can read to babies. So everybody's grabbing encyclopedias off the shelf now and running towards the pram. No, I'm only being flippant there, but it's extremely serious and valuable research. And well done to you, Sinead McDally, your assistant professor of psychology at DCU's Institute of Education, and also collaborating, of course, with your colleagues in the United States, in North Carolina at Chapel Hill as well. Thanks for joining us this morning, Sinead.
Thanks so much, Clem.
Been very informative. Well done indeed in regards to that. Now, also, we're going to be hearing from the Force of Trade Union in a couple of minutes' time.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Okay, coming up, we'll be heading to the Athy Municipal District. But first, let's give you a chance now to hear our mystery voice. Now, here's what we want you to do. If you want to have a guess at this, you text or WhatsApp us on 0833 97 97 97. Do not put your guess. All we need is your name and your number. Well, your number will come in automatically to us. We'll pick a listener, we'll ring that listener back. We don't know what answer you will have, and we don't want to know until we put you on air. So are you ready? One more time then to hear the mystery voice. Three speakers here.
Yeah.
And no.
I'll give you one more. Yeah and no. Have a listen one more time, and then we'll do it maybe in about 10 minutes' time.
Yeah.
And no.
Okay, there you have it. Kira?
Yes, so moving on, we're speaking now to the Assistant General Secretary of Force of Trade Union, Shane Lambert. Good morning to you, Shane.
Kira, how are you?
Good, thank you very much. So you're here to speak about Force of writing to all school principals and the Board of Management of Schools, urging them to take the steps to ensure adequate ventilation and air quality in the classrooms, and also to provide the SNAs with FFP2 grade face masks. Just to remind people, that's also known as the KN95 masks. People may be more familiar with that. Shane, the first thing I want to ask you is, Is it currently a requirement for all schools to administer high-grade face masks to teachers?
To teachers, I'm unaware. We don't represent teachers, so I'm not aware. I think there is.
The reason I ask you that, Shane, is because I was speaking to a friend of mine over the past few days who their school in question does administer FFP2 grade face masks and has actually since the beginning of the pandemic. Yet some teachers are not given the FFP2s. So in this case, you'd be calling for all SNAs, who rightly should obviously require the adequate PPE that's needed to keep themselves safe, but all SNAs being called on to have the FFP2s may mean that some teachers do not have them.
Well, just that example that you set out there is actually one of the things that's kind of the issue at the moment. Is so up to, let's say, Christmas, all SNAs were issued with the medical grade 3-ply mask, the EN14683, and forgive me if I forget a digit, but I think that's the kind of standard code. And when the HSE decided to review their use of masks in around the Christmas time, they upgraded the level of mask required for patient-facing roles to your FFP2, your N95s. So they said anywhere where there's kind of direct patient care being provided, that these are the quality masks that should be provided in those instances. Now, if you look at the likes of the SNA role and the complex care that that provides, it is very much, you know, akin to a patient front-facing role. They meet the care needs of pupils. They're down right beside them. It's a very much a face-to-face, hands-on role. Could be providing very intimate care at points and stages. And it is most likely that the child won't be in a position to wear a mask, and social distancing simply just cannot be maintained. So there was further advice then issued for the HSE in that regard, and we said that we would like similar advice issued for the SNAs, given the similarities with their role. And what the department have done at the moment is effectively said that where these masks are requested, they could be provided by the boards of management and individual schools. And what that has resulted in is very much that kind of disparate situation.
Yeah, Shane, what does, you know, if they are required, could be administered? That's all if, whens, buts. That really is not reassuring, I'm sure, to any of the SNAs out there.
No, absolutely. And it leads to that situation that you described, your friend had described to you, where, you know, some instances they may be getting them without an issue, and in others it's a case of, well, that's not the directive from the department. So what we need is very clear, consistent advice that goes out that says, you know, this is the minimum standard required and should be given, and that's point blank. And obviously, these masks, the newer masks, they're quite heavy, they're quite dense. So there may be people out there that would say, well, actually, that may not, I may not be able to operate with that mask. And look, if that's a case, they can be dealt with. But in the main, these masks should be the minimum standard that people can expect. And if they ask for them, they should get them.
I'm actually wearing one myself at the moment. I have been for the past several months, and I do know they're more expensive. So even if SNAs who aren't getting them provided from their school are going out and buying themselves, it is a big burden on people when it does come to the expense of these higher grade masks.
Absolutely. Well, I think nowadays every household knows that there has to be a budget for hand sanitizer and masks, which didn't exist 2.5 years ago, because that's just the way it is. There is a little bit of a quid pro quo in the sense that the FFP2 and N95 masks, because they're slightly thicker, because they're kind of more hard-wearing, it's less likely that you may need to change them as often. Now, that depends on, obviously, if you're moving from pod to pod, there's a risk of contamination if they're soiled or damaged in any way. But they are a little bit more durable than the general kind of 3-ply medical-grade masks. So that there may be. But look, the cost in terms of the overall scheme of things is really quite insignificant when you think about protecting the provision of education, ensuring the level of absenteeism remains as low as is possible, and right, you know, ensuring that the children are in getting their education in the manner in which they should be.
Shane, we're coming up to 2 years since the pandemic was declared, obviously globally, that's what pandemic means, but yourselves at FORSA, and I'm sure other unions and organisations have noted to all departments, whether it's the health department, the Department of Education, that I think what needs to be done now, and I assume you feel the same way, is constant reviews, because we know this virus is mutating, we know the guidance is constantly changing, and the changes do come out, like you're mentioning, the higher grade masks for patient facing roles within society, etc. Why aren't these reviews and changes happening, I guess, every few months within these sectors, so SNAs are not left at risk of contracting the virus or, would say, infecting somebody else who's a vulnerable child, for example?
And there are certainly concerns in terms of, I suppose, how advice permeates throughout the system and into different areas. There does appear to be a lack of consistency in certain approaches, and certainly there's a delay in getting things done. I think we really need to learn from this. As you said, we're over nearly 2 years in, and we're coming up to the 2 years. We'll be over it soon. We need to be looking at this, as this could be a feature of life going forward. Hopefully the pandemic passes, but it is likely things like this may happen again, and we need to be prepared for them. And it's not sufficient that, you know, there's a delay in one side. When it's as clear as day that things make sense, then changes and the implementation of those changes should move in a consistent manner across all sectors, in particular in the public service. And obviously we'd like to see that. As we said, you know, you look at patient-facing role and you talk about an SNA providing intimate care and being face-to-face with their student. You can't make a rational argument that those two are not the same. They are very much the same kind of roles and the very same risk that's there.
Okay.
So it seems to beggars belief that we have to kind of go and have another look in that area, as opposed to it being an automatic application of those provisions into the education sector.
Okay, Shane Lambert, Assistant General Secretary with FORSA Trade Union. Thanks for the time.
Kildare Today.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
KFM. Okay, Bridie Nolan, good morning to you.
Good morning, Tim.
And good to talk to you, Bridie. Where are you located?
I'm living in Naas here, and I'm going on 82 now, Tim.
You're going on 82, Bridie. Yes. Fair.
And I spent a lot of my time down in Clare.
Did you really? Where?
Down in Ennis Diamond.
Ennis Diamond. Have you relations there, Bridie?
My brother lived, and my sister-in-law lived there. They had a little shop there in Kilshenny.
In Kilshenny, have they?
They did. They're dead now. The Lord of my passed away.
Yeah,
I'm the survivor of the family.
Right, Bridie, that Kilshenny, which is about a couple of miles outside Ennis Diamond, between Ennis Diamond and Doolin or Liston Varna.
I spend a lot of time, most of the time down there with my husband and two girls.
And where was the shop, Bridie?
It was in Kilshenny.
I know, but where in Kilshenny was it located? Was it on the roadside there?
But yeah, a little small little shop. It sells papers, sold papers and a whole lot, little grocery shop.
Yeah, is it gone now? Or has someone else taken over the business?
It's gone long ago. The nephews got rid of sold it.
Right, okay.
Murray was my sister-in-law's name. Murray, Lil Murray.
Right, I know exactly where you're talking about, Bridie, in relation to that. So good to talk to you. You're half a Clare woman, Bridie, are you?
Pardon?
You're half a Clare woman, are you?
Well, half and half.
Half and half in relation to... Were you born in Naas, Bridie?
Well, I was born in Naas, yes.
All right, good Kildare woman in regards to that. Okay, Bridie, have a listen to this now. Take your time, a minute.
I'm not very good at the quizzes now, Ben.
Right, have you
My daughter Sharon and Salon, the auctioneer, might be better off to do it. I've done it.
Right, okay. But have you any idea who these voices are?
I don't think I will, but I'm a bit deaf as well, you know, 82. The line isn't very bad on this phone, an old phone.
Look, Bridie, have a listen anyway. You probably won't have a clue, but let's have a listen.
Yes. Yeah.
And no.
I'll tell you one more time now, Bridie. Don't say anything. Just have a listen.
Yeah.
And
no.
Yeah and no. Any idea who those speakers might be, Bridie? Don't worry, Bridie. It's all right.
Yeah.
It's okay. You have no idea who they are, no?
I can't hear any speakers, though.
All right, okay. I'll tell you what, Bridie. Look, it's good talking to you, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Yeah, okay, Tim.
All right, Bridie, we'll let you go then. That's Bridie Nolan in regards to that. Not much joy there anyway. I think we'll have to make it a bit more easy. Hi, all. I enjoy your programme. Just two questions, says Christy O'Connor. Could you tell me why RTE News gives the number of people that die in the north? Also, why are medical consultants the only people that require payment before they do their job? Imagine the outcry if a plumber asked but never mentioned those who have died from the virus in the south. People for €250 for their service. I see Christie's over Monastreven. Yeah, you pay up front in most cases. Indeed, if you ring your doctor nowadays over the phone, apparently I hear from people that the first thing you get asked is, that'll be €65, please. How times have changed, you know, where you're asked for money up front in regards to... And the point is made well there, by the way, by our texter, that in the case of tradesmen or tradeswomen who come to do jobs in your house, they'd never ask for the money up front. Anyway, the boil water notice, someone is asking about that. Any update on the boil water notice? I can tell you the update. It's still in place. And it's going to be in place for a couple of weeks. So keep boiling that water. And remember that boiling, whether you're in Kildangan, Kilberry, North Athy or Monastreven, all working off the Monastreven water supply, boiling means when the water comes to a boil, you leave it boiling for a full minute. And be careful in regards to that. Owen.
Yeah, let's go to the Athy Municipal District then, and Councillor for Labour, Aoife Breslin, joins us on the line now. Aoife, good morning to you.
Morning to you and to your listeners.
Motions that you brought forward to the recent meeting. We'll start off in Nerney, Aoife. You wanted the council to provide an update on the taking in charge of Castle Gate in Nerney. What update did you get there?
Yeah, this is quite a small estate, and some of the residents have been in contact with me in relation to work that's outstanding, particularly in relation to an old fence there that, you know, that there are issues with and badly needs to be replaced. So Kildare County Council have informed me that they did advertise for the taking in charge of the estate in 2020 and 2015. So there's a body of work there that needs to be done, but it's a process that I feel that we will be able to move forward, because as you know, the additional staffing has been put in that section in Kildare County Council, which is about time, considering the amount of estates that we have to take in charge. But I think this is something that I can work with the residents and we'll be able to get to a resolution. And in the meantime, I have asked for a costing on replacing the fence there. There is some work to be done with Irish Water, as you know. Sanction has to be obtained from Irish Water in relation to taking in charge of estates, and Kildare County Council have listened to Irish Water at this stage.
Okay, if we go to Athy, and we mentioned this with Councillor Brian Dooley earlier in the programme, and he referenced that you had a similar question in relation to St Michael's Cemetery in Athy and works there, when you wanted them to commence and you wanted an update there.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, for once, the council is even ahead of itself. Work has commenced on it. It commenced last week, towards the end of last week. And this is something that I have raised for a number of months and even indeed a number of years. My own parents are buried in that section of the graveyard. And it is a section that has been, you know, not kept to the same standard as everywhere else. And the Director of Services, Joe Boland, has visited a number of times with me there and had a look at it. And I'm pleased to say a contractor has been appointed and work has started. And you know, that's an issue that I did put up yesterday on my Facebook page, and the amount of people that it affects, you know, it's much more than what you think. It's a very emotive issue for people who visit the graveyard, and a lot of people find solace from visiting their loved ones there. So I'm pleased to say, look, work is commencing. I think a good job will be done, and you know, and I'm happy that we had a resolution on this one.
Okay, and finally, you wanted the council to provide an update in relation to works being carried out to the wall at Abbeyfield in Ballitore by the owner.
Yeah, this is a wall that is on the main footpath into the village of Ballitore. It's a very old wall. It's in a, in my view, a dangerous condition. I had raised it in 2021, and at that stage, a Section 3 notice had been served on the owner. But unfortunately, the owner hasn't done any work to it or done any remedial work to it. So at this stage, the council are now going back to serve a notice on the owner again, and hopefully we will have some work on it is done over the next couple of months, and I'm maintaining that this should be on the progress report until we get a resolution on it.
Okay, great stuff. With those motions brought forward to the Athy Municipal District meeting over the last couple of days, Labour Councillor Aoife Breslin, thanks for that, Aoife, and good morning.
Thank you, and good morning to you and your listeners.